by adding amendments, but I think it's okay.
We will call the Senate Tax Committee to order for Tuesday, April 8, 2014. Welcome, members. We are going to go through the tax bill today. Do we need to put this in the hall first? So, members, what I'd like to do is there is a technical amendment. It's the A18 amendment. Staff has been working on this. The department has brought a few issues forward, and they've caught a couple of other technical provisions. I am assured this is truly technical, so I would like to offer the A18 as an author's amendment. Maybe when Mr. Sylvia or Ms. Pollack walks through the amendment, we should highlight that there is one policy change in here dealing with the domicile of attorney or CPA residency. Ms. Pollack?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Sylvia?
On lines 1.4 through 1.16 of the amendment, this is an addition that was amended into Senator Saxhog's bill 1724 dealing with the notifications to the county assessor, city finance officer, and superintendent of the school district. On lines 1.18 to 1.19, this is technical change from the reviser for the biofuel tank, simply replacing the term "and" with "or." On lines 1.20 to 1.22, these are changing the effective dates for the CPA IES to age payable in 2014 based on the supplemental aid payment that is using the data that is in these found in these other sections. On lines 1.23, this is the provision for the City of Jackson, the abatement authority. In the bill, we have a line that exempts the city from any other law to the contrary dealing with abatements. We are striking that so that the city would still be subject to notice requirements, resolution, but they would be able to take advantage of the increased abatement authority.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, beginning on line 1.2. Four of the amendment. This is a technical change just to pick up the new percentage threshold for the June accelerated remittance. Lines 1.25 to 1.29 are technical changes to reflect the provision on qualified refurbished data centers that was included in the amendment to Senator Ress 2934 last week. Beginning on line 1.30 to 2.22 of the amendment. This is the change that you mentioned, Mr. Chair, that would add language to require the department to not consider the location of a taxpayer's attorneys, CPAs, or financial advisors as a factor in determining domicile. Line 2.24 is a technical change to reflect preferred language by the department for the transit parity subtraction. Lines 2.32 through 3.3 clarifies that the increased amount for the military credit for service in a combat zone applies for active service in a designated area after December 31st of 2013. Lines 3.4 to 3.8 are clarifying changes, and it states that the volunteer first responder credit is refundable. Lines 3.9 is technical, just to correct a cross-reference. Lines 3.10 to 3.13 are the changes I mentioned earlier with regard to the domicile factor, and these pertain for the estate tax chapter. And I believe Mr. Sylvia will go over the next few lines.
And Mr. Sylvia, if they're really truly technical, we'll be brief. Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I just want to to make sure that the changes that were made so far have no fiscal impact on the revenue estimate. Is that correct?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, no, these are purely technical changes. Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I've just clarified with Ms. McQuay that the addition of the provision, on the domicile provision, also would not have an impact.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Sylvia.
On lines 3.17 through 4.17, these two sections were amended in the unsessioned bill. There was one of these sections that were in the property tax bill, so we are deleting them from the unsession and just inserting at the two sections that were not amended in property tax article.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Pollack.
Line 4.19 all the way through 7.35. This just reflects a correction for a statutory site that is at the very beginning of the very beginning on line 4.20. However, this section of statute is long, which is the reason for the lengthy number of pages in the amendment. On 7.36, this is technical, deleting a section that's no longer necessary after the passage of the first tax bill. That also applies on line 4.17. And then 4.18 to 4.21 are technical, and these sections are already modified in the unsectioned article of the bill. Mr. Chair, and that concludes the summary of the A18 amendment.
And Senator Rest moves the A18 amendment. Any questions, members?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Rest.
So, what is it we're doing to Turkish baths? We're going to tax those now? Or they don't exist?
I do not know, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chair, I think this
Mr.
is...
Mr. Sylvia.
My understanding is this is just a term that's no longer used, and they're just removing it from the section.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I believe that Turkish baths are incorporated in the term steam baths, which comes right earlier, so it's no longer necessary.
It's really getting into the 21st century.
Was there anything else?
Mr. Chair, no, there's nothing further.
Any questions, members?
Your lines.
Senator Rest.
Chairman, I'd like to modify my amendment and to delete or to strike lines 3.4 through 3.7 on the advice of counsel.
Senator Rest moves to strike lines 3.4 through 3.7. Credit to be refundable.
And maybe Ms. McQuay can explain her advice. But I'll just incorporate striking that.
Is Ms. McQuay?
She's coming.
Mr. Chair and members,
McQuay.
I just cross-checked the revenue estimate from the volunteer first responder credit, and the revenue estimate notes that it is non-refundable, so we'll just clarify that in the language during committee here, that it's a non-refundable credit. The language you're deleting made it refundable, and that may change the revenue estimate.
Senator Rest incorporates that deletion.
So it's a it stays a non-refundable
stays
credit,
a non-refundable
as,
credit.
Is, as per the as per the revenue estimate and the language in the body of the bill. Yes, so I incorporate that, striking lines 3.4 through 3.7.
the A18 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A18 is adopted. So, members, we are now on to the bill, and we're going to have Senate Council walk through it, but I just make a couple of comments before we start. Over half the money that is spent in the TALES is in the sales tax exemption for local governments that we are working on to expand that to joint powers and special districts. There is a smaller amount of money going into the county program aid for aquatic invasive species. We do spend a smaller amount of money on 2014 conformity for people that have gone through foreclosures or short sales. That we conform to the 2013 in the first bill. And then there's a significant amount of one-time money in paying back the June accelerated shift. Other than that, the majority of these provisions are member provisions. But we'll have Senate staff walk us through the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sylvia.
Article 1, property tax. Section 1 is a bill that modifies the Emergency Medical Service Special Taxing District Authority. Sections 2 and 4 require the Commissioner of Revenue to notify the County Assessor, City Finance Officer,
Mr. Chairman,
and
Senator Rest.
I wonder if there was some additional language or whatever through in the A18 amendment, if when you're going through it, if you could just say this is covered in there, so if members are questioning it later, we say it was already in the A18 amendment. Sure.
Mr. Chair, I should note, Section 2 and 4 that required the notification, an additional section that was amended, this is the first section in the A18, also requires that was the originally in the amendment, but it was not included in this bill, and that requires the notification. Section 3 is a provision that extends the time period for an electric generating facility in Beltrami County to commence construction in order to receive a property tax exemption. Section 5 limits the sliding scale market value exclusion to those that are currently receiving the exclusion. No new facilities would be eligible. Section 6 is the result of the Department of Revenue study dealing with the taxation of kind of storage tanks for biofuels, wine, beer, and distilled beverages. And this would make changes that if they're part of the process, they would not be considered real property. Section 7 extends the time period for cities and counties to certify their proposed levies to the county auditor. Section 8 and 9 make changes to the composite judgment and installment payments for residential homestead properties so that the rate would be the greater 5% or 2% above the prime rate. Sections 10 and 11 relate to the Anoka County Levy Authority, and this would allow Anoka County to levy property taxes for public safety improvements and equipment on a pay-as-you-go pace. Section 12 makes changes to the special taxing districts, special service districts, that allow for mixed-use properties so that the properties under current law need to be 50% or more Class 3. Sections 13, 14... 15 and 17 all deal with the new county program aid need aid for acquired invasive species.
And members, there is a run that deals with that should be handed out. Bring your attention to that. Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, Section 16 is a technical change to the LGA formula that we passed last year. Sections 18, 19, and 20 are technical changes to the payment in lieu of taxes provisions that were passed last year. Sections 21 and 24 is the bill that would allow a subordinate service district in Helena Township to be eliminated, and any outstanding obligations could be used to essentially hook up new members to this new public sewer system. Section 22 is the City of Jackson limitation on abatement. I should note that the amendment, the A18, does make a small change to this provision. This allows an increased abatement authority for the City of Jackson. In the bill, as introduced, it exempted the City of Jackson from all requirements for abatements. We took the phrase "or any other law to the contrary" out in the amendment so that the City of Jackson would still be subject to the notice requirements, the resolution requirements, but they would only be eligible for the increased abatement authority. Section 23 transfers $60,000 from the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board to the Commissioner of MMB for a deposit in the general fund, and this is to pay for an Iron Range fiscal disparity study that is found in Section 25. Section 26 is the bill that eliminates the District 1 hospital district. Section 27 allows for a transition provision dealing with the changes we made in an earlier section for special service districts. And this says that if there any new properties become eligible for service charges given the general law change, that they have an objection authority to file with the city clerk. Section 28 allows for a supplemental 2014 only payment of the new county program aid for aquatic invasive species. This will be made on July 20th. Section 29 appropriates the $60,000 that the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board transferred to the general fund from the general fund to the Commission of Revenue to pay for the Iron Range fiscal disparity study. Section 30 is the bill that we heard that requires a study of the North Dakota oil production and its impact on Minnesota. And finally, Section 31 repeals several enabling legislation over the years related to the District 1 hospital that is being repealed in Section 26 of the bill.
Mr. Chair and members, moving to Article 2 for sales, use, and excise taxes, Sections 1 through 3 are provisions to clarify the Greater Minnesota Business Expansion Program sales tax exemption. These were part of Senator Coonan's bill that was heard last week. Section 4 increases the liability threshold for the accelerated remittance from $120,000 to $250,000 and decreases the liability amount from 90 to 81.4%. Section 5 also pertains to the change in the June accelerated remittance. Section 6 is just a clarifying section to specify that digital audio works and digital audiovisual works prescribed in conjunction with a post-secondary education program are exempt from sales tax. Section 7 provides a sales tax exemption for bullion coin. Section 8 clarifies that presentations accessed as digital audio or digital audio visual works are exempt from sales tax under specified conditions. These were in Senator Rest Bill 1842. Section 9 provides a sales tax exemption for coin-operated entertainment and amusement devices that are purchased by retailers who sell admission to places of amusement. Section 10 makes some clarifying changes to the qualified data centers exemption. This was heard last week in Senator Rest Section 2934. Section 11 also pertains to the Greater Minnesota Business Sales Tax Exemption clarifications and specifies that the exemption applies only to property and services that are primarily used or consumed at the facility and gives nothing further on that. Section 12 is the expansion of the definition of local governments. This was Senator Rest Senate File 1860. And it also provides some clarifying information on the goods and services generally provided by a private business. Sections 13 and 14 pertain to fundraising sales by or for nonprofit groups. It increases the annual exemption threshold to $20,000 and would provide that only the sales that exceed that $20,000 would be subject to sales tax. And it also provides a definition of fundraising events. Section 15 provides an exemption for equipment and associated accessories that are used in snowmobile trail maintenance. Section 16 removes the higher excise tax rate for cigarettes. This would also apply to little cigars, as they are also taxed as cigarettes. Section 17 and 18 make some changes to the accelerated remittance changes that we are that are being made in this bill. Section 19 clarifies the base price amounts for the in-lieu aircraft tax rate. Section 20.
Ms. Pollack, members and to the audience, there's a fair amount of interference on the microphone, so if you could keep your devices under the table or in your laps. Thank you. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair, Section 20 provides authorization for food and beverage sales tax in Duluth. It would increase the currently authorized amount by 0.5%. Section 21 provides authorization for a five-year extension of the Albert Lea local sales tax. Section 22 makes the exemption for admissions to games and events sponsored by the Minnesota State High School League permanent. Section 23 provides a effective date modification for the exemption for purchases covered by Medicare and Medicaid. The same provision would also apply in Section 24. These changes to the effective date would make these changes retroactive to April 1, 2009.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator Rest.
Ms. Pollack, was that in a bill? Whose bill was
last
it?
Year.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, this was in Senate File 1203 that was heard last session.
Senator
Eaton. And Senator Eaton's bill.
Senator Rest, this is a provision that the taxes are basically uncollectible. And
this is the medical device. Okay, I was thinking of it. Now I know what it is. I call it something else.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 25 makes some clarifying changes to the effective date for the changes that were enacted last year for qualified data centers and qualified refurbished data centers. Section 26 clarifies the effective date for the construction material sales tax exemption for a biopharmaceutical facility and would provide that refunds cannot be applied for until after June 30 of 2015. Section 27 authorizes the food and beverage sales and use tax for Procter, and this was Senate File 794, Senator Bach's bill that was heard last session. Section 28 would authorize Albert Lea to validate its prior authorization of the local sales tax. And Section 29 would provide a sales tax exemption in connection with the NCSL conference that is being held in the fall of this year. And that concludes the sales tax article.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the sales taxes for like the Procter one, I think there was a couple others that we just went through. Are those by one says here it's by ordinance. Are they all by ordinance or are they by referendum or by vote?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Nelson, the two provisions here are fall under the category of special local taxes. That is, they're not a general sales and use tax exemption. They're only for food and beverage or lodging. And so these do not require a referendum. They would allow enactment by local ordinance.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
So I'm just curious. I know that one of my cities, Rochester, needs to always get a referendum when they extend that tax.
Senator Nelson, that would be for the local option sales tax. These
yes.
are food and beverage taxes.
Thank you.
Ms. Pollack.
Article 3 is the income and estate tax article. Section 1 makes some clarifying changes in removing unnecessary language for the angel investment credit. Sections 2, 3, and 4 make some changes to the Greater Minnesota Internship Credit. These were in Senator Eakin's bill 2848 that was heard last week. Sections 5 and 6 make some technical changes pertaining to the gift tax that was repealed in the earlier tax bill. Section 7 updates the reference in Minnesota statutes to the Internal Revenue Code. There was a change made earlier this year that would allow contributions to the Philippines charitable giving assistance program that would allow those contributions to be excluded from income in tax year 2013. So this would adopt that federal change. And that pertains to Section 8 as well. Section 9 provides for a subtraction from income for employee transit passes and van pooling expenses. This is the transit parity provision, which would be extended at the state level. The Section 9 also provides for a subtraction for increase resulting from discharge of indebtedness on a principal residence. This provision would be effective for tax year 2014 only. Section 10 also makes an updated a change to the reference to the Internal Revenue Code for the Philippines Relief Act I mentioned earlier. Section 11 increases the credit amount for current military service in a combat zone from $120 to $200 a month. Section 12 increases the credit amount for allowed for past military service from $750 to $1,500. Section 13 provides a $450 non-refundable income tax credit for volunteer first responders. Section 14 is a cross-reference for the alternative minimum tax for the subtractions that were included in Section 9. Section 15 also contains an updated Internal Revenue Code reference. Section 16 provides a new definition for qualified works of art so that those works would not be included in the Minnesota taxable estate and would not be treated as having Minnesota situs. Section 17 is some clarifying language for the Minnesota taxable estate and would require that the three-year look-back for the repealed gift tax only applies to taxable gifts. Does not apply now that the gift tax is repealed. Section 18 also makes a clarifying change for purposes of the three-year look back for the gift tax. Section 19 provides a new credit for tax year 2014 only. These are credits introduced in part in Senator Rest, Senate File 2928, and Senator Chamberlain's Bill 2057. It would allow a credit for taxpayers with a children who have an individualized education program or IEP. The credit is 75% amount of certain qualifying expenses up to $2,000. The other part of the credit, and this is taken from Senator Chamberlain's bill, is the same amount, 75% of qualifying expenses up to $2,000 for qualifying taxpayers whose students do not have an IEP but who have been found to have reading or other demonstrated disabilities. And Mr. Sylvia will cover Article 4.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I'm not sure exactly how to address this but at this point, but Senator Chamberlain and I have have this credit that's good for 2014 only, and we want a review of it in a timely fashion so that if we know that it's doing good things, we could continue it. And Mr. Chair and Senator Chamberlain, I'm just a little bit concerned about the report coming back in October of 2015, where we might not be able to make a timely extension of it. So I'm not going to do anything with that right there, right now, but maybe at some point there could be an interim report as we find out during this tax year how many families are actually being able to be benefited, so that if it makes any sense, we can continue it. So I just want to draw that to members' attention. But I think we leave the language like it is now for the report and that date. But I will be looking at that, and I'm sure Senator Chamberlain and I are working with the department to get as up-to-date information as we can for the future.
And Senator Rest, we did have some conversations yesterday about whether we thought we could move that to February, so maybe we should continue that discussion.
The problem would be that people would not yet have filed their returns, it would be late-breaking news to do it
That's
by
right.
April 15th even. But anyway, I just want to highlight that to members. We do want the information, but we want to do it in a timely fashion as well.
Thank you. Mr. Sellier.
Mr. Chair and members, Article 4 is minerals. Sections 1 and 2 are from Senator Tomasoni's bill that increased the distribution of the tax and production tax to three school funds and the County Road and Bridge Fund. Section 3 modifies the definition of a qualified school project in a provision that was passed earlier this year. It moves the date back 3 years to capture an additional project. Section 4 is from Senator Weber's bill that extends by 5 years the authority for a county that borders two other states and is not contiguous to a county that imposes the aggregate materials tax to charge a reduced rate. Right now, Rock County is the only county that would apply under this section. Sections 5 and 6 modify prior distributions of the tax and night production tax for specific cities and specified projects. And Section 7 reallocates certain terminating school bond amounts to the new Iron Range School Consolidation Cooperatively Operated School account that was created and enabled in the earlier tax bill this year.
And members, the A18 amendment did make a language change to Section 7 of the minerals article.
Article 5, Mr. Chair. Article 5, local development. And Section 1 is a variation of Senator Rest's bill, and this extends the 5-year rule to 8 years for redevelopment districts certified after April 2009 and before June 30th of 2013. Section 2 is from Senator Wicklund, and this allows any remaining money that was authorized last year in the 2013 tax bill for the renovation of the Old Teeter Avenue Bridge to be used to improve bicycles and pedestrian trails. Section 3 is from Senator Rood, and this would allow the City of Baxter to expand the boundaries of a particular TIF district and include one additional parcel that is not currently part of the district. Section 4 provides a 10-year duration extension for the Cedar Grove Tax Increment Financing District in the City of Eagan. This was a Senator Carlson provision. Section 5 is from Senator Franz, and this allows the City of Edina to establish one or more housing districts in the Southeast Edina Redevelopment Project area subject to special rules. Section 6 and 9 are for the cities of Maple Grove, Senator Limmer, and Savage, Senator Hall. This mirrors a provision that was included in the 2013 tax bill that allows these two cities to create certain TIF districts for the mining reclamation project area subject to special rules. Section 7 is Senator Osmick, and this extends the 5-year rule to 13 years, so a 3-year change to what they came and asked for in this provision, and this reflects the change made in Section 1 from Senator Rest's bill for all 5-year rule districts. Section 8 is Senator Weger, City of North St. Paul. This would allow additional time for the city to certify a new redevelopment tax increment financing district and allowed to capture a particular parcel that was not or could not be included because it was outside the 3-year window for inclusion. And Section 10 is authorizing a pilot project for a city with a population greater than 1,500 and located in either Roseau or Pennington County, the authority to establish a maximum of 2 housing TIF districts subject to special rules. And also a report is required. The city must submit to the legislature detailing how the project was funded in addition to the use of tax increment financing.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Nelson.
Thank you. I can't recall the hearing on this particular bill. I know I just can't recall the details. Why did we determine that this would only be applicable to 2 particular cities? It might be beneficial in other places as well. And so I'm just wondering what's the rationale for this pilot project for just 2 cities?
Senator Nelson, this was a Senator Stump bill. We did make some changes to it, but we heard a number of provisions dealing with workforce housing. And if you recall, the problem that we keep running into is that the solution that we're being offered is not large enough to fill the gap. And so This is a very small pilot project that we're proposing for these two counties, and we're actually limiting it to two projects in each of the cities in those two counties, so it's going to be about six projects total. We're kind of trying it out to see if it works, and that's why it's limited to a relatively small area of the state. We do require them to give us a report back to see how they are covering the remaining dollars, because this also will not cover the whole amount needed for this workforce housing. We recognizing that workforce housing is an issue. We're trying to find a solution, and this small pilot project was one of our efforts this year.
Senator Nelson. So I understand that workforce housing is a major issue, and my thought would be that perhaps this is so small we might not get the data that we need, and I would have liked to have seen this on a broader scale, would be my comment.
Senator Esten.
Mr. Chairman, this change in policy is a radical departure for the use of tax increment financing, and I think I'm skeptical, period, about it, but I think it really does need to be quite this narrow before we open the floodgates for purposes for tax increment that were never, ever envisioned. So that's aside from the whole body of issues about what kind of tools do we want to put in the toolbox, as they say, for cities, particularly in Greater Minnesota, to provide for workforce housing, which is in great need, including your area.
Exactly.
Basically, allows you to designate.
Thank you.
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, Section 1 of Article 6 would remove language requiring the transfer for the Agricultural Utilization Research Institute and would appropriate the amount from the general fund and not require deposit into a special revenue fund. Section 2 and 5 pertain to Senator Rest Bill 1287, transfer on title of death to motor vehicles. Section 2 would set forth provisions for allowing a transfer on transfer of title on death, and Section 5 would state that this type of acquisition would not trigger an obligation to pay the motor vehicle sales tax. Sections 3 and 4 are from Senate File 1756, Senator Rest provisions that would require a licensing authority to notify a license holder of the potential revocation within 10 days of notification by the commissioner of the license holder's tax delinquency. Mr. Chair, that concludes summary of the articles. The remaining articles are the unsession and the department policy and technical provisions.
Ms. Pollack, for the unsession, perhaps if we could not go through the whole unsession bill, we've already heard that in detail, but could you address the additions?
Mr. Chair, there are two additions to the unsession provisions. In Section 91, the repealer, there was a proposed repealer to repeal the purpose statement for tax expenditures. This would be the repealer of Section 3.192 of Minnesota statutes. And the other additional repealer, Mr. Sylvia can describe.
Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, the repealer also repeals 270C.991, and this is the property tax benchmarks and critical indicators, as well as the property tax working group. Working group completed studies in 2013. Also, the unsession removes any reference to SFIA, and with the addition, the unsession as it came before the committee eliminated the Class 2E land with commercial aggregate deposit. That was taken out with an author's amendment during committee, and that is not found in Article 7, the uncertain.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
Mr. Sylvia, would you give the site on the second one?
Mr. Sylvia.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, it would eliminate Class 2E, but
out. The property tax working group. What was the number on that?
It is found, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, on page 24 of the summary. It is 270C.991.
270C. I got it. Okay, thank you.
Any questions, members? Senator Dietzick.
Is this on the bill? I have questions on the bill.
Bill.
Okay. And some of these are just clarifying. So on page, and I'm working off of the one we got yesterday, on page 515, it talks about special taxing district. So above, we're talking about, and this is when we're changing the levy date, so it's county and home rule charter school. And
Senator,
then the next.
Senator Dietzick, could you give us the article and section, please?
I am in section 7. I think Article 1.
Article 1.
And this is on the proposed levies. So in A, we're talking the county and home rule charters or statutory cities. And then Section 2, it's towns, and each special taxing district is on the 15th. And so our special taxing districts, does that include, like, the Minneapolis Park Board? They're not a city, but they're an elected body. And then we have HRAs and our regional rail authorities. Are they considered special taxing districts? So do they qualify under there?
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sylvia.
And Senator Dietzick. So under the provision, so the only extensions were from September 15th to 30th would be for the counties and cities. And the towns and special taxing districts would still be required to submit their proposed levies by September 15th. So this would not change any requirements for special taxing districts.
And Senator Dietzick, my recollection is that this is to try to get the fiscal disparity information earlier.
And Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
And, you know, if there was a necessity for the entities that you just mentioned to participate in a later time, that 15 days time, you know, why don't you check with them and then you know, it's the provision is to be enable these levying authorities to have the best information possible when they're setting their levies. So with regard to getting the FD information. So it's not, you know, let us know.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Yes,
I
do have emails and texts out to them.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's go to amendments, members. Senator Bach?
Mr. Chairman, I have an issue.
Oh, shoot. Ms. McQuay, I almost forgot.
Oh, the spreadsheet.
We should walk through the spreadsheet.
The spreadsheet, because I'm not done.
Ms. McQuay.
Madam Chair and members, the committee had passed out a revised spreadsheet from yesterday, and if you're working off the spreadsheet from this, the revised one was passed out today. If you're working off the one from yesterday, I'll just note the changes where they are. Nothing of substance will change. On line 13 begins the income tax changes, and line 13 is the exclusion of discharge of indebtedness, and that's a one-time extension of $7.2 million. Then the allowing the charitable contribution deduction for 2013 instead of tax year 14 is a negligible change in this and the next fiscal year. Line 15 is Senator Kent's qualified transportation fringe benefits change made permanent. That's a negligible effect in each of the fiscal years. Senator Eakin's Greater Minnesota Internship Program modifications do not carry a cost in this bill. Then Senator Coonan's volunteer first responder credit. We heard the provision at 500. In this bill, it's 450, and that's reflected at $8.55 million in the first biennium. Then on line 18 is the increase to the past military service credit from 750 to 1,500, a $600,000 cost. The increase to the combat zone credit to 200 is a $1.4 million cost in the first biennium. And then on line 20 is Senator Reston Chamberlain's refundable credit for tutoring and expenses related to reading tutoring. This is a one-time cost of $11.6 million in the first biennium. Then, members, there's on lines 21 through 24, some income tax interactions regarding some provisions that I'll talk about later. I'll just note, if you're working off the spreadsheet from yesterday, on line 22 there was a reduction of $10,000 in fiscal year 16 that's now at zero for the EMS special taxing district. And that I was carrying 2 years, and it's just applicable to pay 2016. So the income tax reductions in the first biennium total $29.35 million, and in the next biennium, $20.89 million. Then beginning the sales tax changes on line 43 is Senator Rust's exempting certain provision presentations that are accessed digitally that does not carry a cost. There was a provision for fundraising that came over from in the governor's proposal that Senator Skoy carried. This is effective 1-1 of 2015 for a $60,000 cost in the first year and $340,000 in the next biennium. The local sales tax, local government sales tax exemption effective January 1 of 2015 is $11.5 million in the first biennium and $56.5 million in the next biennium. There's some greater Minnesota sales tax exemptions that do not carry a cost as presented in this proposal. The medical device exemption, the retroactivity that was Senator Eaton's bill, is $1.5 million one time. The NCSL sales tax exemption, this includes the liquor gross receipts tax at $62,000 in this biennium. Beginning on page two is the modification for the effective date for the biopharmaceutical facility. This was Senator Hoffman's bill that was introduced this week. That does not carry a cost. There's a data center clarification that does not carry a cost. And then Senator Jensen's bill on line 52 is the trail grooming equipment exemption. The cost for that is a $280,000 reduction in revenue this biennium and $570,000 in the next biennium. Then on line 53 is the coin-operated amusement machine sales tax exemption, reducing revenues by $210,000 this year and $520,000 in the next biennium. Senator Klassen brought to the committee an exemption for a permanent exemption for certain school tickets, and that begins in the next biennium for a reduction of $1.58 million. And the bullion coin exemption was Senator Franzen's bill for the revenue reduction in this biennium is $430,000 and $1.02 in the next biennium. The modification to the June acceleration, both the threshold changes and the percentage that is accelerated into June, are on line 56 and 57. The total sales tax changes then for the first biennium reduced revenues $54.202 million in the first biennium and $64.05 in the next biennium. There were a couple of estate tax provisions on lines 73 and 74. They're listed there, but they do not carry a revenue reduction or revenue change. For the other excise taxes, beginning on line 91, there's a corresponding modification to the June acceleration for cigarettes, tobacco, and alcohol, both the threshold change and the amount accelerated changing from 90 to 84.1. Then there's the elimination of the cigarette excise tax change, eliminating the second tier rate, and that's a $50,000 revenue reduction in this year and a $100,000 reduction in the following year. The total excise changes, and this, again, is a modification from the spreadsheet that was passed out yesterday. These subtotals are corrected here. They did not flow through to the bottom line, so it was just a correction on this line, a 5.3 63 in this biennium and $220,000 in the next biennium. Then we heard the lottery and loop bill, and I'm sorry I do not list the number here, but it was Senator Scoy's bill, and this language was sent to the floor, but I carry the associated revenue reduction here. That's 1.757 in the first biennium and 7.023 in the next biennium. The total revenue changes in the first biennium then are 90.672 in the first biennium and 92.293 in the next biennium.
Let me just say at this point that the lottery in lieu language, none of it is in the tax bill. It's on the floor.
Then on page 3 begins the property tax aids and credits changes. And most of these do not carry a cost, but there are some small changes due to increases in aid or property tax interactions. The proposed levy date extension, Senator Rest's bill on page 3, line 227, does not carry a cost. Senator Dahl's bill, this language is carried here, and is that bill is sent to the floor. That has an unknown PTR interaction in the next biennium. Senator Saxhog's bill to limit the eligibility for the sliding scale market value exclusion has an unknown PTR interaction in both this and the next biennium. Senator Rosen's bill on Jackson has a zero cost to both bienniums. Then there's PTR interactions associated with Senator Coonan's change for the biofuel tanks and real property definition, which has a PTR interactions of $40,000 beginning in fiscal year 17. There's an interaction for an increase in CPA for aquatic invasive species that I'll mention in a later line, and that has a positive interaction in increasing the general fund here for this interaction in the next biennium. Then on line 233, there's a PTR interaction for Senator Metzen's special taxing district for emergency medical services. That has a $10,000 cost in the next biennium. And this, again, is a place where I was carrying $10,000 twice, and it is just a one-time, begins in fiscal year 17 of $10,000. The Senator Jensen provision that the language for the Rice County Hospital, this language was also sent to the floor, and if passed there, I'll track the PTR interaction on this spreadsheet. Is $20,000 increase in fiscal 16 and in fiscal 17. Then on line 235, when the E-12 finance bill went through finance, there was a levy put on in that bill, and we're tracking the interaction here, though we are not carrying any of that finance bill's language or their levy. But the associated interaction is $170,000. Starting in fiscal year 16. Then on line 239, there's a county program aid increase for aquatic invasive species, and that for fiscal years beginning in 15, it's a $10 million increase, or $10 million aid increase, $5 million aid increase, and $10 million aid increase, and the corresponding dates that money will go out will be that $10 million in the first biennium will be paid on July in 2014, then and again another $5 million payment in March of 2015. Then the fiscal year 16, $5 million will be paid out in July of 2015, and then in fiscal year 17 and thereafter, the payments will be made as usual for the CPA in July and December, beginning in July of 2016. Then line 240, there's a LGA and PILT distribution modifications that do not carry a cost in this bill. There's a couple of studies here beginning on line 250, an Iron Range fiscal disparities study that is the Department of Revenue has appropriated $60,000 for this study, and I'll talk later about how the general fund is held whole by a transfer from the Iron Range fund. Line 251 is a study. This was in Senator Eakin's bill for the North Dakota oil production impact on Minnesota, $250,000 in fiscal year 15. Then, as Ms. Pollack mentioned, there's a a repeal for the property tax system benchmarks, and that has a statutory appropriation of $25,000 each year, and that's recognized on line, that repeal is recognized on line 252. Then I just list out the language that was already discussed. Mr. Sylvia discussed the property tax local, and Ms. Pollack discussed the local sales taxes. But I will just take you to page 5, where the transfer on line 297, there's a transfer from the IRRB to the general fund, and this is a $60,000 revenue gain to the general fund that then flows out to the Commissioner of Revenue for the cost of the study. So the general fund is not impacted by the cost of that study. So then the total change on line 305 for the first biennium is $100,872,000, and then in the second biennium, $106,903,000. And Mr. Chair, I've listed the other funds on page 6 and 7, and I can go through those if you'd like, or we can move on to amendments.
Thank you, Ms. McQuay. Questions on the spreadsheet, members? Let's move on to amendments. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I have the A6 amendment.
That's the, is the A6 amendment? Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, I can remember driving down Highway 200, someplace between Walker and Reamer, and the Commissioner of Revenue, Mr. Innes, called me at the time and told me that Governor Plenty was going to eliminate the income tax reciprocity agreement between Minnesota and Wisconsin. And by doing that, he was going to claw back to Minnesota $132 million from the next biennium into the current one. And many of you that were around here remember it actually took us several years to get the $132 million. The state of Wisconsin didn't actually have the money that they owed us. And I have been trying to work with the commissioner. Senator Reinert has been trying. Senator Saltzman previously had been trying. Senator Kent has been trying. I know this is important to Senator Miller, the idea of reinstating this income tax reciprocity provision that was undone by the Plenty administration. And I could have the department maybe speak to the amendment, but I think this language is language that the department feels they need in order to get a final agreement with the Commissioner of Revenue in Wisconsin to be able to reinstate that income tax reciprocity agreement. So I can't really speak to the reasons that this is the language the department has. If people have questions, I'd be very happy to have somebody from the department come and explain why these provisions might make it more likely we can get that reciprocity agreement back in place.
And Senator Bach, did you want to address the dollar amount on page 1, line 35 that would allow the commissioner a little resources to help with the negotiations?
Mr. Chairman, members, if you look at line 1.34 to 1.36, this actually gives the Department of Revenue the authority to negotiate a deal that actually would have a million-dollar loss in the current biennium, which I think has been, and a cap of that, which has been one of the sticking points in being able to execute an agreement with the state of Wisconsin.
Any questions, members? Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Chair Scoy. Thank you, Senator Bach, and to Department of Revenue for continuing to work on this. Senator Bach noted, Mr. Innes, I thought you and I had that conversation. I imagine you had several of those conversations at the time. And Senator Bach is right. We put a ton of work into this since then. Members will remember 2 years ago we reauthorized a study that was 30-plus years old that looked at where our cross-border workers were what state they were working in, and what we knew anecdotally was the gap had grown in terms of Wisconsinites and Minnesota versus the other way around, and once the study was completed, we found that that was to be true. And as Senator Bach notes, the sticking point has been this $6 million gap between what Minnesota believes it loses in the revenue and what Wisconsin doesn't seem to think it owes. So very supportive. I think this gives the commissioner a little bit of a little something to put on the table and try and close this deal.
Senator Bach renews his motion of the A6. Senator Rask.
Just want to ask, there's no revenue impact on this by allowing that cap. Is that correct on our spreadsheet?
I do not think so.
I don't believe so. The agreement isn't in current law, so unless one is negotiated, there wouldn't be a cost.
Just want to make sure that it's not going to impact the spreadsheet.
Yep. Anything else, members? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A6 is adopted. Else? Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chairman, I would like to offer an oral amendment. This is on page 77 of the current version of the bill. Members, this is the workforce housing tax increment financing provision. And you'll recall that we had a couple different communities, a couple different bills. We have a pilot program in here that applies to Roseau and Pennington County. And, Mr. Chairman, my oral amendment would be to add St. Louis County on line 77.18.
And, Senator Reinhart, you did talk to me before the committee about this, and I'm a little hesitant to expand our pilot project to include Duluth. But members, any other conversation?
Mr. Chair.
Senator
Ortman. With all due respect, Senator Reinert, I wasn't a big fan of the pilot project to begin with, but it's not a pilot project if we've got three counties in there now. I mean, I think it's not really a test if now we're picking and choosing who gets to have this tool and who doesn't. And so I respectfully oppose the amendment.
Anything else, members? All those in favor of Senator Reinert's oral amendment to add St. Louis County on page 77, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Aye. Motion does not prevail. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have A7.
The A7 amendment. Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I first want to thank Senator Rest and yourself for working to get the that portion into the bill regarding disability, a credit for disability, and for reading problems. And one thing I think that probably was overlooked and did not get included in that is a piece relating to assignability of that credit. As you might may know, there's a provision where you can assign credits in certain cases. Well, the reason we had the assignability of the credit for the reading credit for dyslexia and others was to get at the lower income people. And this will not obviously change the dollar amount here, but it will give them access. They don't have the funds to get those tutors up front, so we give the assignability so the tutors would be able to get that credit. So that's what this is. And again, I appreciate your help in getting that put in.
And Senator Rest and Senator Chamberlain, I know you've been working on this. So, Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, I don't understand what he's trying to do here.
Senator Chamberlain, could you walk us through that one more time?
Sure, Mr. Chair and Senator Rest. So what we're doing here is what we're saying is that the reading credit, as this applies to the reading credit, if a parent has a child, they has been diagnosed with dyslexia and they want to get outside help, tutoring help, low-income parents would not have money in pocket to go do that. So they could go to this, go to the tutor, and we have a provision in statute in Minnesota DOR that allows that low-income family to assign that credit to the tutor so that that parent can still get the services from that tutor. Is that clear?
And so, Senator Chamberlain, so the credit dollar amount is not going to change.
No.
It's just going to be an assignment to the provider that would assure them that the reimbursement is forthcoming to them.
Yes. No change in the credit amount, although I would like that, but we'll leave that as is.
Senator Rest.
Ms. Pollack, are there what other instances in law, in the tax laws, do we allow such an assignment?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, I'm not sure of all of the instances in current law where assignment would be allowed, but in the current law for the K-12 credit, these assignment provisions are allowed for. And so Senator Chamberlain's amendment references in pertinent part those sections for the current K-12 credit.
And Mr. Chairman, would this also apply to the other credit that's for parents with children who have an IEP?
Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, no, as this amendment is drafted, it would only apply to the reading credit portion of that new language.
We could.
Well,
we
Mr.
Could
Chairman, Senator Chamberlain, I don't understand why it wouldn't apply to both, and I understand, and I'm okay with it, but I don't think we should discriminate between low-income parents who are of dyslexic children from those low-income parents of kids with other disabilities that have IEPs.
Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I would agree, and it would be fine to expand that if you would like. And we can do it now, do it later. If you would accept it on the floor, we could do it then as well.
Mr. Chairman, I think we should take care of that kind of thing in the committee. Ms. Pollack, do you have a suggestion on how we could include the other section of that to include the other bill?
Ms. Pollack. Ms. Pollack, should we see if there are other amendments while you work on this?
And then come back to it.
And come back.
Mr. Chair, I would appreciate that. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain, could you withdraw your amendment temporarily and we'll come back to it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will do. Thank you.
Senator Chamberlain withdraws the A7 temporarily. Senator Nelson.
Mr. Chair, well, before we totally leave this section, I just want to be clear that this applies to more than dyslexia. There's many different types of reading deficiencies or reading needs. And so I don't want the record in this committee to at all indicate that the language in this bill, as far as reading intervention, only applies to dyslexia.
Mr. Chairman.
And I think Senator Rest was making that point also. Senator Rest.
And Senator Nelson, I referred to those parents because it was that that group of parents that started working with Senator Chamberlain, Senator Hoffman, Senator Kent, and I think a couple of others. Yes. It was the concerns that were coming from parents of children with dyslexia, and then it is expanded exactly in the way in which you indicated with other children that are indicated through evaluations that have learning disabilities with regard to reading, and then other learning disabilities that are indicated by their IEPs.
Yes. We'll come back to this. Senator Dietzick.
Mr. Chair, sorry. My question is regarding this, and it's just to make sure, because online in section one of this reading credit, it talks about they were found to meet the criteria, or was not found to meet the criteria of having a specific learning disability. So I wanted to make sure if they have dyslexia, that they still qualify under here, because you can have dyslexia, my understanding, and then not get an IEP. But I want to make sure dyslexia is actually not ruled out of this reading credit.
Senator Rest.
Yeah, Senator Dietzick, no, it specifically is not. Senator Chamberlain can explain it in greater detail, but that was exactly the problem or the issue or the challenge. And
right.
So the other criteria is an evaluation that shows a student is considerably behind in reading level, so that an IE and would not qualify for an IEP because they don't have they don't have special needs in other areas, and so it covers both.
Okay.
And not specific to dyslexia, but others as well.
Other amendments. Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The first is the A3 amendment.
You can hand out the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, if I can just explain, we have an expansive repealer on page 152 under section 91, and I think the repealer goes a little further than it probably should. In section 270C.991, which is referred on line 152.21 of the bill, the entire section of law is eliminated. And I don't think, I hope that's not the intent of the committee. I do think that we should be eliminating that portion of the law that relates to the property tax working group, which is subdivision 4. And so by adopting the A3 amendment, we would be eliminating the section related to the property tax working group because the work of that commission and group is done. They had a report that was due in 2013, and they met the requirements of the report, and they've completed their work. But the remainder of 270C.991 has some very important benchmarks and critical indicators for evaluating our property tax system and some of the principles that we expect for the review of property tax proposals so we can do our work with good, solid information. It includes an evaluation of whether the property tax proposed changes are transparent, simple and efficient, equitable. Also some major indicators about the price of government and the tax incidence report. So I don't think the intent was really to eliminate all those benchmarks, but rather the property tax working group. And I hope that members will support the A3 amendment.
Senator Hartman, I think this is reinstating that provision in law that nobody is doing currently. There are no reports being generated, and it does add to the cost.
Well, Mr. Senator Chair, this was a new provision that was passed and hasn't yet become effective by the Department of Revenue, but I think that we should insist that the Department of Revenue do this work. It's the kind of work that will assist us in evaluating these very complicated property tax proposals. There are so many factors that affect property taxes when we have any kind of an amendment. We've seen how complex this area of law is, and I think that the Department of Revenue should be asked to do the work that was enacted into law and signed by the governor in 2011. And so we shouldn't repeal it before it's had a chance to be useful.
Anything else, members?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Nelson.
I believe, well, maybe the reports have not been submitted yet. We certainly see that graph on our sheets that come from research as we look at these different property tax interactions. And I actually like to look at those specific areas, transparency, accountability. And while it might not provide a lot of information, it certainly is a flag to look at if we see that it provides less accountability or less transparency. So I find that helpful in the research documents to at least have that so that you know what area maybe needs a little bit further detail or something that we need to be aware of.
Actually, I think, Senator Hartman, you might be on to something that we were just a little farther in our unsession repeal mode than we probably should have gone. And so just to be clear, we are going to leave the tax committee review and resolution in place.
Get rid of the working group.
But get rid of the working group.
Correct.
Mr. Chairman, I'd support that.
Senator Rest supports the A3 amendment. Any other discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The A3 is adopted. Thank you, Senator Hartman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Senator Hartman.
I'd like to offer the A2 amendment.
Thank you.
And members, this the A2 amendment relates to our tax incidence study. I was appreciative that the Department of Revenue included an evaluation of the federal tax burden for Minnesotans, but it was not required to do so. And I think that it should be an element of our tax incidence study to evaluate and consider the federal taxes paid by Minnesota residents. And this had a very slight fiscal expense related to it. I think it was $15,000. It was very minor. But we certainly have the funds, and we should be asking for more information for Minnesota taxpayers and voters rather than less. And so I hope the members will vote in favor of the A2 amendment.
And Senator Ortman, I think we had some of this discussion last year, and we decided to not include information that was outside of the control of the Minnesota legislature, so we didn't include this information.
Well, Mr. Chair, with all due respect, we include property tax and other evaluators. I think we should include, nobody looks at their tax burden and doesn't count the federal tax burden. You start with your federal taxes, and then you pay your state taxes. So I think it's just more information. I would hate to think that the committee would want to keep valuable, relevant information in the evaluation of tax burdens borne by Minnesota taxpayers. It's a very little thing to ask here, to ask the department to factor this in.
Senator Ortman renews her motion on the A2 amendment. Anything else, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
No.
Motion does not prevail. The A2 is not adopted. Senator Bach.
Mr. Chairman, our committee fiscal analyst brought an issue to my attention on the Tomasoni bill that was in front of this committee relative to some changes to taconite money that goes to school districts. And there's a technical change that needs to be picked up, and it's purely conformity with the change in the Tomasoni language. On line 60.18, we changed 4 cents to 4.45 cents. But then there needs to be a corresponding change on line 62.19, where the current law says 4 cents, and then it makes a reference to the amount distributed in line 60.18, which is a different number. So, Mr. Chairman, it's just to make the language consistent on line. I would move orally on line 62.19, delete the word 4, and insert 4.45.
And this is to, Senator Bach, this is to bring the amendment into balance so that it balances out for the fund?
Well, I think the two are in conflict with each other. In one place we say distribute 4.45 cents to the school districts. In another place we don't pick up that change and we distribute 4 cents. So I think it's to make it consistent.
Okay. Would you just point that out again, Senator?
Senator Rest, on line 6.18, 60.18. You'll see a change where the word 4 is changed to 4.45. And then on line 62.9, it says 4 cents must be distributed to the line 60.18. But the change was made on 60.18, but just wasn't picked up on 62.19. So it's purely technical.
So we're picking it up
on 60.18, that's the correct number.
That's the correct number, correct.
Senator Bach moves a technical amendment to insert 4.45 on 62.19.
And replace delete 4.
And delete 4. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed,
aye.
Same sign. Oral amendments adopted. Other amendments? Senator Coonan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you remember, yesterday we heard the solar energy bill, which establishes a production tax for solar energy, and there was quite a few questions in committee on this bill, and actually I received a lot of questions.
Senator
after
Senator Coonan, is there an amendment we should pass out?
Oh, yes, Mr. Chairman, the A5 amendment. Thank you.
The A5 amendment, yep. Senator Coonan.
So, anyway, Mr. Chairman and committee, I received a lot of questions about this and how it would work. And as you receive the A5 amendment here, you'll see that it's a study on energy production systems. And what it would do is study both traditional and renewable energy sources,
It would address methods by which personal and real property energy systems are taxed, the available ability of exclusions, and in lieu of tax payments that would apply to any and all systems, and then recommendations on taxation of solar energy systems, including both real and property tax. And this study would be need to be prepared by February 1st of 2015.
And thank you, Senator Coonan. I members, I think this is something that we need to do. We currently have about four different mechanisms for dealing with personal property and electrical generation. These older facilities, larger older facilities, are paying this. If you look at the bill, you're going to see a SCOI provision in here exempting a peaking plant from this very provision, and a Senator Coonan proposal to add a production tax on the solar comparable to the production tax that's currently in place for wind. I think that we ought to spend the interim looking at this and coming to some resolution comparable to what we did with the fermentation tanks. I think that the department and the members did a good job on that proposal, and I think we should take a little look at what's going on with regard to these energy taxes before we institute another production tax. And so I would support the Coonan amendment. Senator Est.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm glad that it also addresses other renewable sources of energy. I mean, it's specific to solar, but also what you call the more I guess wind has now become a traditional source of renewable energy. And I also recall the storage tanks study, and I don't know whether it was in the language or not when we put that study in, but I think it really made a big difference that legislators were involved and invited mm-hmm. to participate in the discussions among the stakeholders. And I certainly hope, I don't remember that was a requirement, but I know I participated in a couple of those, and I think others here did too. And I think that's a really important feature so that when they come back with it, we will already be familiar with the various alternatives or analyses and have heard the stakeholders ourselves. Reaction to what is the best way for them to participate in the obligations to the local community. So I hope that's the understanding of here, then that's what the department would do even without putting any additional language in.
Thank you. Senator Bach.
The only thing I would add is to those of you that want to work on this, and I think this is a good idea, is the one thing to be careful of with this, and we ran into it with wind energy, is some of this money is going to go to school districts. And just be careful that the school districts actually get new money because I think the way the current law is probably crafted, there actually becomes a state offset. And the state actually saves money. The school districts, even though we impose this tax, don't get any new money. So those of you that want to work on this, just be aware of that. We went through that. We've gone through that for years with taconite aids. We went through it a few years ago when I chaired this committee with the windmills when we started putting a production tax on them. So if you've got an interest in this study and being involved in this as we move forward with some policy, just be aware of that so we don't get down the road somewhere and all of a sudden have to try and fix it, and all of a sudden it costs a lot of money to fix because there's been a lot of solar built.
And Senator Bach, that's exactly where we ended up with Senator Coonan's proposal, is that it's a dollar-for-dollar reduction in aid from the school districts. My intent on this would be to take a look at the current wind production tax and see if there isn't a better mechanism for that also. Anything else, members? Senator Sanjan.
Mr. Chair and Senator Coonan or anyone, as the bill talks, for instance, in line 17 and other places as well, it talks about energy-producing systems. I guess my question is, what is that? And when we talk about energy-producing systems, for instance, we've had lots of discussion about exempting pollution control, including pollution control. Are we studying the whole, if you will, universe of energy here, nuclear, everything?
so on and so forth.
Well, Senator Senjum, I suppose I would hope that we didn't go there. I think that we were going to try to target this to the property taxation of energy production. I suppose there could be some discussion about the pollution control exemption that's currently in place, but that wouldn't be the what I would think would be the focus. I'm primarily thinking about the personal property tax that utilities pay or propose to pay and get exempted from. If you look at the subdivision, that the SCOI provision is in this bill, it's number 92. So the reason number 92 is moving forward is because 89, 90, and 91 did. As number 4 probably moved forward because number 2, 3, and 4 did. You know, I mean, it's not, we're not thinking about what we're doing anymore. We're just doing it because that's what we've always done. And I think we need to go back and revisit why we're giving these exemptions, why we're giving special tax treatment to some and not to others. And that would be my hope.
And, Mr. Chair, I think it's a good
idea. Senator Sanger. Senator Bach.
So, Mr. Chairman, I know on my way to drive down here, I see a number of outside wood boilers where people are burning wood. So that's an energy-producing system. So are the trees that the individual grows on their land to feed their wood boiler that's an energy-producing system going to be considered in this study as for a potential tax reduction?
You know, we actually have another study, or the legislative auditor did some work with regard to forestry and sustainable forestry, and so we'll probably have some discussions about that next summer also. Anything else, members? Senator Coonan renews his motion on the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A5 is adopted. Senator Chamberlain, the A7 amendment. Ms. Pollack.
Mr. Chair and members, on the A7 amendment, the following changes would be necessary to include the provisions for Senator Rest's credit to the amendment. Line 1.3 of the amendment, strike 23 and insert 25. Line 1.4 of the amendment, delete the first parentheses C and insert subdivision 3, period. Line 1.5, delete subdivision and insert section. Line 1.6, delete subdivision and insert section. Line 1.7, delete reading and delete paragraphs A and B and insert this section. Line 1.8, delete reading and delete paragraphs A and B and insert this section. Delete line 1.11 of the amendment and then insert the following. Page 59, line 26, delete 3 and insert 4. Page 59, line 29, delete 4 and insert 5. Page 59, line 31, delete 5 and insert 6.
And Senator Rest moves the oral amendment to the Chamberlain A7 amendment, and we aren't going to ask her to repeat that. But
we're going to ask Chamberlain to repeat it.
Yeah, we are going to,
Mr. Chair, Senator Rest, I'm sure that's correct.
We are going to understand that this is an effort to expand the credit to
the assignment of the credit to it, to both in both instances.
In both instances,
and Mr. Chairman, that would be my amendment to the amendment, with the understanding that if there needs to be a technical correction,
we would direct staff.
That the staff would do that with our permission.
Yeah, we will direct the staff to make technical changes on this provision. All those in favor say
Mr.
aye.
Chair,
Senator, expand
it to what, for instance, other autism or things like that?
Any child that has an IEP.
Okay.
You understand?
Okay, I got it.
It won't bother. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The amended A7 is adopted. Or the amendment is adopted to the A7 amendment. Now the A7 amendment, Senator Chamberlain.
As amended.
As amended.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I would accept that and move that we just accept A7 as amended.
Any other questions, members? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amended A7 is adopted. Senator Chamberlain.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Members, I have a couple here, and hopefully you might indulge me a little bit just for a little discussion and see how this might work. I have an A-19 amendment.
The Senator Chamberlain moves the A-19. Could we pass it out? And I am looking at the clock. Session's at 11. I was hoping to have a few minutes for public testimony. Senator Chamberlain.
Yeah, just briefly. We have discussed this before in this committee. Senator Gazelka brought this bill before the committee last year. It is simply an exemption for military pension from income tax in Minnesota, for Minnesota income tax. And this particular amendment would be a full exemption. This is about roughly $24 million a year, similar to what when we start rolling out the city sales tax exemption, what that would be. So this is a full exemption of military pay and pension for retired military personnel in the state of Minnesota, exempted from income tax.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. I would just say that this would put us considerably over in our targets. In the bill currently, we do have an expansion for active duty from $120 per month to $200 per month. We also have an increase for the veterans from $750 a year to $1,500 a year. It also increases the phase-out final number from 37.5 to 45,000. So there is provision in the bill that fits within our target. The A-19 would put us outside the target. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This proposal is long overdue. I think there have been several state senators that have proposed this. It's made it into bills. It's made it onto the governor's desk and been vetoed, unfortunately. This is a very important improvement in our tax code. It sets a policy to encourage and recognize the amazing contribution of our servicemen and women. But more importantly, it's a really smart economic development tool. These folks are highly trained, highly skilled, with amazing experience that they can bring back and put to work here in Minnesota. They bring their families. We want to encourage folks to come back to Minnesota and not have Minnesota as an outlier. 34 states do not tax military pensions, and we should not be doing it here in Minnesota. And so I would ask for a roll call vote in support of this amendment.
Roll call requested. Roll call granted. Anything else, members? Clerk will call the roll.
Okay, Senator Skoy?
No.
Senator Bach?
No.
Senator Chamberlain?
Yes.
Senator Dietzick?
No.
Senator Eaton?
No.
And Senator Conan?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Nelson?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Reinert?
Yes.
Senator Rest?
No.
Senator Senjum?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
A vote of 6 yeses and 7 noes. The amendment does not, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Any other amendments? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a slightly different version then. This is scaled down. This A-20 amendment. I'll just say A-20 amendment.
Could we get the A-20 amendment passed out? Senator Chamberlain.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this amendment scales down the previous proposal a little bit, make it a little more affordable. And this language in this amendment was accepted in the House on the floor, a floor amendment in the House during debate just the other day. So this is already in the House tax bill. And as you can see, we're talking $1,500. So we're scaled back, but it did make it in the House. So I hope this might satisfy the committee. Thank you.
And Senator Chamberlain, I think this provision was stripped out of the House bill by a delete all amendment. of Representative Loon, so it's not in the House bill.
Mr. Chair, I think it was amended into it on the floor.
And then there was an amendment offered after that that stripped it back out again. There was a Loon delete all amendment. I think so. Mm-hmm. Anything else, members? Senator Chamberlain moves the A20 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign.
No.
Aye. Motion does not prevail. The A20 is not adopted. Anything else? We have a list of a few testifiers. Mr. Carlson and Mr. Diding. And let's put Mr. Egger with this three. I heard that we did. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Andrew County Association that consists of nine of the larger greater Minnesota counties and four of the counties here in the metropolitan area. First, I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for its inclusion of $10 million ultimately for additional county program aid targeted to aquatic invasive species. Also like to thank the committee for at least partially addressing the sales tax issues remaining for local governments in that the bill addresses the issue with regards to joint powers entities. Certainly like to encourage the committee and the Senate, if additional money could be found, that be moved up in its effective date from January 1st to hopefully July 1st. Because in the meantime, depending on the county, in many instances, smaller counties will be the ones adversely affected. Their services, the inputs to them, will be taxable, while the larger counties, they'll be non-taxable. I do want to mention a couple of concerns that have been raised previously by the assessors, and that is on the assessment of tanks and various vessels for the bioenergy and brewing industry. Well, the language specifically addresses the concern of those industries. I concur with the assessor's concerns that other industries are going to be back in the future, and this issue is going to come back again with the language that's there. Final concern is with regards to the sales tax, the list of services where governments in some instances will be taxable on the inputs to those and some will not be taxable. I'd like to say the language on lines 32.26 through 32.27, we welcome the clarification on ball fields, computing services, and services provided by one local government to another government. But however, the list up on lines 3.20 through 3.22, I'm sorry to say, is probably going to make the issue more complicated rather than our objective of making it simple and clear cut. Specifically, the existing language up on 32.18 that says goods and services generally provided by a private business include but are not limited to. The inclusion of that existing language will continue to put cities and counties and the other local governments that are now pulled into the exemption in the situation where we don't know exactly what is meant by that term. And so we continue to advocate for a specific list that is provided by the legislature. Instead, this list that's provided here calls into question the department's interpretations to date. For example, on lines 32.21, the language recreational and athletic facilities. Does this include football fields, soccer fields, tennis courts, and picnic facilities? or other facilities that most members of the public would deem to be a public good if it's provided in a public park. Specifically, it calls into question the current Department of Revenue interpretation that ice arenas are not, the inputs to those are not taxable because they're generally provided by the public sector. In addition, it creates the situation, or it exacerbates the situation that exists currently, that these same services or facilities provided by school districts are non-taxable, but if they're provided by a city, county, remain taxable. So you could have one soccer field complex across the street from another soccer field complex. The one operated by the school district, that's a non-taxable entity for all the inputs that go into it. The soccer fields across the street operated by the city or the county remain taxable. So I hope that we can continue to work with the committee and the chairs to see if we can better address this issue. And with Mr. that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
And Mr. Carlson, we've had some discussions internally about whether it would be better to delay this as the House does to resolve these issues that you're talking about. Would you prefer that we delay this? It is one of the larger cost items in the bill, and we certainly would be able to accommodate that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members, I would frankly highly recommend the language in the House bill because it does address this issue with specificity, and it does within the same financial parameters that are currently within the Senate bill, the difference being the treatment of the special districts.
We will take that into consideration. Let's do the assessors. Mr. Dibing.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm here again on behalf of the Assessors Association. The study group in 2013 was referenced, and it was members of the industry, legislature, the Department of Revenue, and the Assessors Association. We did reference in our the summary to that study group that we were that we wanted the language to remain the same and to be consistent throughout. And a second point is that the language that is in the new language does specifically talk to certain industries and not all of the industries that are involved in this language.
So, thank you. Mr. Eggers.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Egger with the Minnesota Association of Realtors, and I'll be very brief. I just want to thank you, Mr. Chair, and Senator Rest and others for including the provision on the discharge on principal indebtedness. It's in the income tax article. As this committee is well aware, you did a retroactive provision in Tax Bill 1 that was signed into law for 2013. I think it's a very good provision to enact this for tax year 2014. It's hard to tell when or if Congress will enact an extension. It's quite likely they will at some point, and so I think this is good foresight on the Senate's part to include this in the bill, and we appreciate your support.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, Ms. Nauman, Mr. Wilkins, and Mr. Espenson. While they're coming up, members, there is a amendment that needs to be taken on the A5 amendment. We need to change the year 2014 to 2015. So Senator Rest moved to reconsider the A5 amendment, or Senator Coonan moves to reconsider the A5 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion prevails. The A5 is in front of us. Senator Coonan moves that on page 1, line 5, we strike 2014 and insert 2015. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The amendment is made. Senator Coonan moves to readopt the A5 amendment as adopted.
As amended.
As amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The A5 as amended is adopted. Thank you. Ms. Nauman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Patricia Nauman, I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, and I'll be very brief today. I just want to thank you for your work on the adjustments to the local government sales tax exemption. I think I could echo what Mr. Carlson has said around. We know the pressures you're under with your spending tails, but we do hope that you can work on the effective dates and that we can continue to work on having specific language with respect to the goods provided by private business. I also just want to note we appreciate very much your inclusion of the extension of the TIF 5-year rule to 8 years. This is both an acknowledgement of the lingering effects of the economic recession on redevelopment projects and also just the general complexities that are associated with doing redevelopment projects in general. We also appreciate your inclusion of modifications to the special service district law to allow for residential properties in mixed use developments to be included in a special service district, and these are both just very important tools for local government, and we are very appreciative. So we continue working, looking forward to working with you as the bill progresses. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Espenson.
Thank you. My name is George Espenson. I'm with the Eden Prairie Fire Department. I'm chair of the State Chiefs Association's Legislative Committee. And Mr. Chair and members, I would just like to thank you all, and in particular thank our author, Senator Coonan, together with Senator Rust and Senator Skoy, for your leadership on the income tax incentive provision of this bill, which we hope will help address some of the issues surrounding volunteer firefighter recruitment and retention. So we thank you very much for your support.
Thank you. Anybody else wish to testify on House File 3167?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Doug Carnival, representing the National Waste and Recycling Association.
Mr. Carnival.
Thank you. I just want to thank you for including in the description of the things that are not exempt under the municipal sales tax exemption. You've included, as an example, solid waste management services, as we discussed at the hearing. Just want to make sure that you're thinking about not only hauling, but landfilling and recycling in that definition, and perhaps some language needs to be considered as we move forward. But thank you for including that as a one of the issues, one of the items that are specifically not exempt. Thank you,
Mr. Carnival. Members, anyone else? Mr. Berenstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bo Bernson from the Association of Minnesota Counties. Just want to echo some of the thanks you've heard from local government groups today on the clarification and expansion of the local government sales tax provisions included in the bill. Making sure that joint powers and collaborative entities among local governments were able to take advantage of that sales tax exemption was one of AMC's top priorities this year, so we appreciate that inclusion in the bill. As was pointed out, there are some ongoing issues related to the provision about goods and services as inputs competing with the private sector. But as was mentioned before, we do appreciate the budget constraints you were under, and we do want to keep having those conversations with the committee. I will also thank the committee for the major investment in battling the spread of aquatic invasive species in Minnesota. It's an extremely important issue for counties as the spread of AIS threatens our local economies and our way of life. We're grateful that there's new language in the bill that gives counties greater flexibility to use this money in cooperation with other political subdivisions and environmental organizations. So thank you.
Thank you. Questions, members? Anyone else?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rest.
I'll move the bill as amended.
Senator Rest moves that we adopt House File 3167 as amended, recommend it to pass, and send it to the Senate floor. We also direct staff to make necessary technical changes. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. The bill's passed and sent to the Senate floor. Seeing nothing else before the committee is adjourned.